Welcome back, you weekly scrappers. This episode is powered by Everlast. Thank you guys to the Everlast team for supporting your boy and this podcast. So if you guys are funk fans or fans of the podcast, please support the Everlast team whenever you're going to buy any type of sporting equipment or apparel. These guys do a phenomenal job for making MMA equipment, boxing equipment. They've been in the combat sports space for a very, very long time. So if you need training gear, you know where to go, everlast.com. Hey fellas, are you tired of nicking the royal jewels with crappy razors and trimmers? I know I am, which is why I use the Manscaped Perfect Package 2.0 kit. No nicks or snags guaranteed with the Lawnmower 2.0 waterproof manscaping trimmer. That's what I use. Trimming in the shower has never been easier and on the go. Your significant other will appreciate you taking care of your royal jewels for them, so you can walk into that bedroom confident, fierce, and ready for action. You know what I'm saying? Also, in the Perfect Package 2.0 kit, you will receive the Crop Preserver to keep your crops fresh and anti-chafing ball deodorant. Think about this. If we put deodorant under our arms, then why wouldn't we put it where it's easy to get smelly because it's stuck in your pants all day? Think about that. When you order the Perfect Package 2.0 kit, you'll save money instantly. For $74.99, you get $137 worth of grooming products. And if you subscribe, you'll get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower delivered every 3 months, giving you the freshest and most hygienic shave possible. And you will get the new Plow 2.0 safety razor. Use my code FUNKMASTER at checkout for 20% off plus free shipping. And for a limited time only for the subscribers out there, you will get a free gift for the Shed Travel Bag, which is a $39 value. So head over to manscaped.com right now and trust me, your balls will thank you. Hey, how's it going? How you been? What's scrappin'?
The Weekly Scraps, motherfuckers.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Weekly Scraps, episode 46, BMF time. Oh, man, but first, let's get into what happened in Singapore. But even before that, I want to touch base on a couple of things. Shout out to our guy, Pumi Nakuda, with a big win in his pro debut at Bellator MMA. Bellator 231, crazy fight for him. Not crazy in the sense that it was like crazy like back and forth. It was crazy like the performance that Pumi was able to put on was absolutely nuts. Pro debut, looked like a veteran like no other. Looked like he had possibly 5, 6, 10 fights already as a professional. But that just goes to show you the hard work and the dedication that he has put into the game and into his craft. I'm constantly looking to evolve and improve as a mixed martial artist. Now, he's from South Africa. I can't remember exactly if he was born there or not. I believe he was, and then came over. He grew up in New Jersey, went to school out there, wrestled. And then he came over to us when he went to school in the Hofstra University. And from there, we took him under our wing, and so far, man's been nothing but great things for him. I don't think there's ever been a fight where I even think he's lost a round yet, to be honest. He's come out of the gate, guns blazing, and he's been on point ever since he stepped into that first fight as an amateur. And this fight, man, the spectacular combinations he put on. Now, even in the beginning, like, he dominated with the wrestling. I already knew that was not going to be a problem, not going to be an issue whatsoever. I wrestled with the guy, I trained with the guy, sparred with him, so I knew what to expect. I knew what his capabilities were already going into that fight. It was a matter of, was he going to let his hands go? That's what it was for me, because I know when I made my pro debut, I threw a lot of strikes, but it was so random. But I was ultimately looking to attack the legs and put the guy on his back. And Pumi kind of reminded me of a young myself when I was watching him. And because I knew what exactly was going through his head. Like, you open up with the strikes, you see your opponent hurt, you see the glaze in his eyes. And then for some strange reason, you decide to dive on the legs for a takedown and then land some ground and pound and advanced position. Pure domination. But it's a little bit of
an instinctive thing that you got to kind of reprogram in your brain in order to get past that point where you could see an opponent hurt and you're not thinking, okay, wrestling takedown, the opening is there because the guy's covering up or his hands are really low and he's kind of looking like a zombie on his feet. So I remember at one point we were telling him about the body shot because his opponent had his elbows out like this almost the entire time, striking and trying to walk him down. And I was like, dude, you got the switch kick to the body or you got the liver shot right there. Anything you want to the body. His elbows are wide open. And, man, he came out. He slipped and just ripped. Boom! And you could tell the guy kind of sat there and was like, wait 1 second. Let me reevaluate what I want to do right now. I kind of need a second to catch my breath. And the way he came out after that, followed up with so many beautiful punches, just his combinations and his hand speed looked insane. He looked good. He looked seasoned. He looked crisp. And I'm honestly super excited and pumped about his future. I cannot wait to see what's going to be next for our guy, Pumi Nakuda, a.k.a. Turbo Time. He did a good job getting those takedowns, dumped them over and over. I want to say he got at least 6 takedowns that fight. Trapped the guy's legs. He did show me something that he did in the back room that was tripping him up when he was lacing the one leg on top. He was showing me his opponent was taking that free leg that wasn't trapped and coming inside and unlocking the tangle to slide his leg through to create a little bit of space so that he can slip his knee line through to kind of reclaim guard or just get back into a better butterfly turtle position so that he can not get trapped there and eat a ton of punches, which was smart on his behalf. But then I showed him an adjustment to that because I couldn't tell what the guy was doing. I couldn't see from that side of the angle that we were sitting on because I was wondering why he never really transitioned to mount except the one time. But then the kid came back and gave up his back. And, you know, if he had got the submission, we would have all been happy. But I want to see him go for the kill, like, you know, violence. That's what I wanted. I wanted to see him open up the way he does in the room when he's sparring with myself, he's sparring with Marab, and he's sparring with all these other guys, Pambos, Naoki, Uka Sasaki. He's going with tough, tough guys. So he's getting the fucking work in. And then he's getting his BJJ Jits game on over at Sarah BJJ on Tuesday nights. And hopefully soon, Friday mornings, once he gets further along in his career and he no longer has to work that day job, you know, I remember being there, having to work and do all this stuff, but I'll get my work in around it, you know, we figured out a ways around that and make sure we get the job done. So I'm just excited, man, he did a lot of good stuff, but I showed him the transition to counter that counter, and he was going to end up in mount, and kind of when I showed him, he was kind of like, oh man, wow, I'm like, yeah, like, you don't think about it yet, because I'm over here like, well, what's to stop you from doing this when he does that, and you kind of walk your knees up. But you kind of, it's almost like an army crawl, but with your knees. And you pinch and you climb and you climb and you climb. And eventually the guy has to give up the mount. Or he can try to buck you up over the top. But at that point, you're in a high mount position. It's going to be hard for him to do that unless he's super flexible. He can almost throw his legs over the top. So at that point, he's not really bucking you up over the top. It's him trying to go almost like an inverted leg lock entry attempt in order to get out of that situation. But I have no doubt he would have been able to dominate that position. But the joke of the day, oh my goodness. So we were in the back room. I'm not going to say exactly who it was, but there was a fighter who was upset. And it was hysterical because the doc was trying to get him to like leave on a stretcher. I'm like, dude, I know what that feels like. It's a humiliating thing. No one wants to leave in a stretcher. Sorry, 1 second. At all, especially when you got your friends and family there. So I completely empathize with the guy. And he was kind of like, what's up, doc? Like, you can get these hands too. But the way he said it, which was hysterical to me, I had to try to be an adult and not completely lose my shit because I thought it was hysterical. I was like, oh, we getting hood up in here. And he goes, yo, you acting like you're not a human too? I could check your chin right now. What's up, doc? And I'm like, yo, this is crazy. And the doc was kind of flustered, was like screaming for security, went outside, we need security in here right now, and hold this guy's check. I was like, damn, all this could have been resolved in a much cooler and calmer manner, but it is what it is, man. Emotions are high right after a fight, you know, so I get it. But I just thought that was really funny. Funny in terms of like how I grew up. Obviously, it's not going to be funny to everybody because it just took me back. to like a place where when we were kids, we used to say stupid shit, do stupid shit. Didn't matter your status quo, your figure. If we felt violated or disrespected, we were coming out the mouth crazy and just talking wild shit. And that's just how it was, you know? And yeah, it was no disrespect really to anybody. It was just, that's just how it is. That's just how we grew up. And obviously, I'm older now and I'm mature, but just hearing him talk like that, I'm like, oh, it sounds like a younger me. I'm like, but there's better ways to handle this. And I want to intervene and be like, dude, this is not worth it. You want your paycheck. You want all this stuff. Just do what these guys are saying. You don't got to go on a stretcher. You can pretend you're going on a stretcher and just bounce. Like, simple as that. Don't create the scene. You created a scene for yourself, which now ultimately turned into something else. But it is what it is. Other than that, man, the trip out to Connecticut was fun. We took the ferry out with Longo. We drove down. We had some bonding time. Myself, Ray, and Dr. Sherry Wolkin, friend of the gyms, longtime friend of Ray Longo. And she's actually a lot of the time a ringside physician at the fights. So she works a lot of the events, which is pretty cool that we have an opportunity to work with her and for her to be able to pick up on things in case we're hurt or certain things like that to kind of help guide us to getting back to 100%. So it's been cool having her around. And obviously our relationship has gone a lot more from like over the years, which is cool. So yeah, we took the ferry over. We had some family bonding time, some quality time. We talked about a lot of things. And yeah, it was a cool ride. It was only, so it was an hour, I think it was like an hour and 20 minute like drive out from Syosset Ray's house all the way down to Calverton around that area to Orient Point or something like that. Hopped on the ferry, Ray took his car. And then it was about a 6 to 8 minute drive to Pumi's Hotel. And then we drove over to the Mohegan Sun. Then we got ready for game time. And then we left later that night, ended up getting home not till like 2 a.m. pretty much. It was a fast drive back home. I think it was like 2 hours. But it was so late, I was even like contemplating just staying with the boys and coming back in the morning. I hate the late night drive sometimes. The late night drives, sometimes they kill me, man. It's like, you're just sitting there looking at road for not like nonstop. It's late at night. Sometimes I get worried about the deer that could just pop out of nowhere. It's not Australia where it's kangaroos that pop out on you. Pop out with the gang. Other than that, man, so this weekend we started celebrating my girlfriend's birthday. She just turned 29. And Sunday we had the crew together. We went out to Farmerdale. We had a little fun out there. That was cool. And we went to, what was it, Dark Horse Tavern, and then we went to somewhere else. Oh, actually, we went out Saturday. Then we went out Sunday back to Farmerdale. So we went out to Farmerdale twice. I lost my freaking hat. My hat just like this with the red and white font. Pissed, because it was my last one that I had. Actually, I can't even take one off the inventory and sell it to myself or whatever. But yeah, it is what it is. Lost my hat. We went back Sunday with Dre Berry, Mai, Will, Darnell, my two roommates, and Will's girl came. So we all hung out. We had a good crew, and we had a good time. And then yesterday, we went out just to have a chill day, and the chill day ended up turning out to be something crazy. And Rebecca is feeling it right now. She's still feeling it, like currently downstairs, hurting. That's what happens, man. You come out, you party, hearty, and you know, it's her birthday. You know, she wanted the birthday song. She got the birthday song and then some. But we went to this place, Escarza's. That was really fun, low-key. We met the owner. He was wearing 3 hats. He was the bartender. He was the host. He was the server. Oh, 4 hats. And he was the cook. Because another cook wasn't there yet. So it was pretty slow at the time, which was, you know, I didn't think anything of it, but he hooked her up with a couple birthday shots. He met us. Al came down with Volante and Katie. She's almost due for her pregnancy to have her baby, I think, early December. So she looks, you know, she's got a belly belly. So it was cool that they came, hung out. They just closed on their house. Volante and Katie did. So that was nice. And Al stuck around. They left because Katie wasn't, you know, she can't, when you're pregnant that far in pregnancy, it's hard for you to stand up, I guess, for long periods of time and sit down for long periods of time. I guess it puts a lot of pressure on the ribs and all that. At least this is what I'm being told. I have no idea. I don't have carry babies. I don't have that capability. But it was cool, man. We got to hang out with everybody. We haven't seen them in a long time. So I got to check out Vellante's new place. And I got to check out Al's new place. But before we did that, we hung out at Escarza's, hung out with the owner. We got three margaritas, myself, Al had two, Rebecca had two, and then he gave us three shots each for the birthday girl. And yeah, it went, so the chill day, which was supposed to be, oh, let's go get like one or two drinks, some food, and go back, hang out, watch some shows, catch up, just relax, just turn into us pretty much just getting bombed. I was like, what the fuck just happened? So we go to Al's new place on the water. That was sick. He showed us the whole inside, how everything looks. It's right on the water. So we got to see the neighbors. We got to see the boats next door. We drove through the block. And I was like, yo, this is motivation. This is some big time motivation. Like, oh man, those were $1 million houses. $2.2 million houses. $2.5 million houses. $3 million houses. All along the coast. Houses that were beautifully renovated from the outside, so I could only imagine what the inside looked like. And I was like, man, if I could get my shit together with the real estate game, I could. This is definitely attainable. Very, very attainable, achievable, all that good stuff. And like, just even with this house, I know I posted that I refinanced it. So my mortgage here was $29.34 a month, and all in with the utilities. Obviously, I live with roommates. My utilities and everything come up to about $3,600 a month. Crazy. Now, with that being said, I just refinanced and I took almost $400 off of my mortgage. So, and I posted this on Fellowship Home Loans, guys. And this is not a plug for the, not a ad, like something I thought I was going to do, but it is definitely worthwhile if you guys are looking to refinance your house while the rates right now are so low. And honestly, if you tell them that you know that you got this referral from Aljamain Sterling, I'm not getting paid from it whatsoever. They hooked me up. They took care of me. They pretty much did it on the arm and charged us nothing. Everything that they were going to make, they credited it back to us. And the closing process, they can close faster than 4 weeks. They can close faster than 20 days. They closed my house, I think, in like, I think it was 15 or 16 days. And it was a traditional loan. And that was a loan for my mom's crib. So when you factor that in, I'm like, yo, these are good people to work with. So if you guys are looking to refinance, like I said, the rates are really low. My interest rate on this house now is 3.25. And I got and I only lived here for a year. I'm just over a year now since August. But I only lived here for a year. I refinanced. So I had 29 years left, back up to a 30-year mortgage. And to lose $400 off the payment, I thought that was ideal. Because obviously you pay down, the money goes back into the equity every month that you pay. Interest goes to the bank. You don't ever see that shit again. So whatever. And I got the PMI taken care of because I had more than 20% of equity after the refinance. The appraisal came back $100,000 higher of appreciation. And obviously the renovation, the rehab that I did in the house. So money. And it wasn't a refi out where they were trying to lowball you so that they can say the house isn't worth this much, so they give you a lower number. I was just getting a refinance to lower my monthly payments. So that is the true value of what my house is worth. So I'm like, fuck, man, my house is now worth $540. Okay. You know, I made $100,000 off of it since, I mean, not made, but it appreciated since the money I put in. So, yeah, so I don't know if you guys are into real estate, but once I get talking about it, man, I really get into it. And all this started from me talking about Fellowship Home Loans. And like I said, if you're looking to refinance, I'm not trying to go on too long about it, but just want to give you guys a quick insight. So my mortgage is now, I think, roughly $2,560. So I lost roughly $400, a little less than $400, but roughly $400, okay? So that saves me a lot more money. Now if I go buy another property after another fight, you know, knock on wood, you know, we win the fight, everything goes great, this house will pay for itself. I'll have the completely rented out to tenants and what have you, whoever are family tenants. I got the basement and I got 4 bedrooms here, and then I got my mom's house. I'm renting upstairs, I'm renting the main floor to my mom and my sisters and my brother. So I'm not making any money on that property, but it's building equity over time. I'm breaking even on that. That's all I want. I'm not looking to make money off my family, even though it would be nice if everyone, if I could charge everyone that type of money. But obviously, as family, you want to help them out and get them started on their own too, so that they can start to do this for themselves. So now, with that being said, I'm going to tie this back into the houses over there on the water, because that's eventually what I'm trying to get. So now that pays for itself. This pays for itself. Now, the next one, if I, you know, I get a good down payment, I could take that and plug it into the house on the water. And that could be my, that can count as my second home. Like the ones here that I have now, they're too close to each other in proximity for it to be considered a second home. So I can't do that. I have to use the income from that as a, I have to use it as a rental property. So I don't get that break benefit. It's a rental property. It's income based. So I have to charge fair rent as in the government's eyes. So whatever. Income investment property, my primary now. Now fight, win, whatever. Take that money, put some aside for taxes, pay my coaches and everything. Boom, that's all done. My managers, that's all done. Then I have the money on the side. Put down a down payment, maybe 2% or something like that. Show the income from my house being covered. Show the income from over there being covered. Now, this is my new primary. Now, those are my two rental properties. Or that could be, I could have one as my primary and then one as my second property home, because it's on a waterfront. So it's a different vibe, different feel. And like that can actually work. And that's how I could probably attain that and make that possible. But obviously my payments over there are going to be like $5,000 a month, $6,000, depending on how much or how little I put down at the closing or whatnot. So real estate is such a fascinating thing, and I'm not trying to bore you guys with that, but hopefully you guys did find some valuable information. And like I said, if you got a house you want to refinance, and you got to think, very rarely pays off their house and or lives out the life of the house loan. But if you can refinance it all the way down, get cheaper payments, you see more of your money, you're still building equity, and you could take that money that you just got back or that you're saving it and use that to put towards something else, like another property. And guess what? Your net worth has just increased, and you're making money from those two properties now. So you see, it depends on how you want to play it, but there's so much ways to make money. So I used to think, and Weidman schooled me on this. He said, this is the poor man's way of thinking. Everything you get debt, you want to pay it off right away, And I used to think that about the house. Maybe with the car or something, that's real debt. That's not an asset. That's a depreciating, it's hard to call it an asset. It is somewhat of an asset if there's a liability on it. But for the most part, it's a liability. It's a depreciating liability, for lack of better terms, a depreciating asset, whatever. So that you could pay that off as soon as possible, whatever. Unless it's really, really cheap, really, really low. But for a house, you can get a low interest rate, make money on it, refinance now. Say you paid off 15 years, like, oh, I only got 15 more years. I'm not going to refinance now. But if you refinance, you got so much equity in the house, you don't got to touch the equity. Or you could take some of the equity out, pull it out, down payment on another place, rent that entire thing out, or move there and then rent this entire thing out, right? So you have income coming in here. You put your down payment from your old house into here. Now someone's paying your property over here, and they might even be exceeding because you refinance. So your payments went lower. So you're making money on that house. You take that extra money, plug it into your house, and you're almost virtually living for free. It's fucking bananas. This is why I'm so passionate about it. But all right, man, fuck. We gotta get into the goddamn weekend rewind. All right, let's do this. The weekend rewind. Boom. All right. So a couple fights that I wanted to talk about. Some stuff that was impressive to me. What's the girl? Loma Lukbumi. She looked great. She fought Alessandra Albu. Now, she won split decision. I thought she won that unanimous. I understand she was backing up the entire time. But backing up and landing strikes, once again, I've been preaching this nonstop over and over and over again. I thought she was dominating. I thought she was the clear, concise winner. Her clinch work with those knees, wow. Wow. When I say an art, like, that was beautiful to watch. Everything she landed, knees coming out to the side. Ooh, hey. Knees coming in sharp up the middle. Ooh, hey. Off balancing her, dumping her, and then walking away, turning her back like her shit don't stink, flashing her hair. Then turn around. Oh, you're back for more. Boom, back in her stance. Back in her Muay Thai stance, moving that left hand, that lead hand. I'm like, yo, this girl is fucking bad. She's a bad ass. But she looked good, and I was super impressed. Now, one thing Albu did that was highly impressive, of course I got to talk about this, and I can't wait to talk to Matt, because Matt's definitely going to want to talk about this. Whoops, adjusting. Matt's definitely going to want to talk about this for sure, and it's the jumping cutback scissor sweep at the end of the very third round. The chips are down. She's already losing the fight, and she comes with the Hail Mary, and it's an actual successful attempt. Like, she actually gets her down to the ground, and if there was more time in that fight, if she decided to do that a little bit earlier when she realized she was getting dominated in that clinch, that could have been a different fight. 100% could have tired her out. She's probably not as experienced on the ground. Maybe could have even gotten a finish, submission or something, TKO, or landed big enough strikes to slow her down into the next round where she could have maybe changed the trajectory of the fight. At least in the stand-up department, because in the stand-up department in the first and second round and even the third, you can just tell she just didn't really have nothing for her on the feet. But at the end, I was just super impressed with that. She hit that old school. What I've got Kyle Uno. I think it might have been Kyle Uno who hit that on Anderson Silva way back in the day. Next fight, Movistar Evloev versus Enrique Barzola. That was a really good fight, competitive. That one, I thought there was going to be a chance to make an argument that, you know, actually, no. I thought at least 29-28. I misspoken. I'm thinking about the last fight that I was just talking about with Lugbumi. That fight, for sure, I thought Evloev won. I thought the same thing, though, because of that split decision that Lugbumi had, that they might even mess that one up and say, one of those rounds was really close because he kept going forward. I don't know. I thought his best round was his third round. And one judge even gave it 30-27. So it's really tough to say. Sometimes you just really never know what's going on, what are the judges looking at, and what they might be thinking while you're in there. So and people always say, don't leave it to the judges. But it's hard. How can you not sometimes when you have a tough dude like that in front of you? The next one, Rafael Fiziev versus Alex White. That guy, you just want to talk about intensity. That guy was coming out throwing, as Gooden said, he's throwing bones. He was letting everything fly. And then he letting the leather fly, of course. He threw that one combination the first round, inside leg kick, and then he fired back with two hooks. And I was like, bro, this guy is not playing. And they both connected. Alex White looked hurt bad, and I thought he was going to be a potential that he was going to get him out there in the first round. But like a veteran, he's stuck in there. Alex tried over and over to get the fight to the ground. He could not. It was a very tough fight for him to deal with. And Fiziev, I guess he's one of the coaches over at Tiger Muay Thai, and he looks very, very promising for sure. I would like to see what his grappling game does look like, because he's short and stocky. It's not like he's tall, long, rangy, where it's going to be hard to get this guy down to the ground, kind of like a Bochniak versus Sean Woodson, where the height discrepancy, you know. So other guys in his weight class, you know, could be a better wrestler than Barzola. Might be able to get him down, and that could be a different type of fight. And I was really impressed with Barzola and his scramble ability, defending a lot of those takedowns or getting back up to his feet right away and not really letting Evloev control him too long down on the mat. But for the most part, Evloev was looking good on the feet, landing some crisp striking. Now, he was leaning over a lot, though, in his right hand. I wasn't sure if it's just because he was looking for that takedown so much, because it looked like he was over falling over, throwing that cross time and time and again. So I wasn't really sure if that was just how he strikes or if he just sets that up, like throwing it, hoping to maybe lean and like fall into a takedown attempt, or maybe that's like his way of getting into his shots. I don't know. It was a definitely different look of striking that I haven't seen in a while, I would say. Because I know there was another fighter that used to do that same type of thing too. Ronda Marcos versus Ashley Yoda. That one, crazy. I didn't, split decision. I wasn't sure who was going to get the nod. Very, very close fight. Ashley Yoda, oh man, she gets into these split decision wars. I remember Masvidal say he was a split decision king, and no one's got more losses via split decision than him, which is very, very true. No one's got more split decision losses than Ashley Yoder. It's insane for a female division. I never seen someone get so many split decisions in their life. It's, I don't know what it is, but she gets into these split decision fights time and time again. And with that reach advantage that she had on Randa, I thought she was going to be able to run away with it and just keep her on the outside. But, whoops, Randa was able to get inside. I got to tighten this thing up before the thing falls. But Randa was able to get on the inside and make it a much more difficult fight than I thought it was going to be. And congrats to her, man. That was a big win for her to get back, get everything back on track. So I wonder what's next for her. And I don't know what's going to happen with Yoder either. So, again, a lot of split decision losses for her. I know she's had a tough run in the very, very beginning. She's fought some tough, tough girls coming right out of the gate. And, yeah. I don't know. Now the next one, Muslim Salikov versus Loriano Staropoli. Decision 30-26, 30-26, 29-28. Wow. Salikov is phenomenal. His spinning back kicks with no telegraphing is one of the best in the game, I would have to say. The king of Kung Fu really does come out there and just lets it rip. I was really, really impressed with him, his calmness, how poised he is, his reads on punches. Now, the thing that I will say about him, which kind of reminded me of when I fought Jimmy Rivera was so good at timing you, hands high and tight, stalking you down, reading you, trying to wait for you to throw, and as soon as you throw, he rips. No hesitation about it, he just goes. Same thing with Salikov. And I knew that going in, so guess what I did? I use a lot more feints to draw out his attacks. But Staropoli was trying to feint when he could. And other times he was just throwing, coming up short. It looked a little bit sloppier. Not as crisp with the hands as Salikov was. Looking for that overhand right to come over the top of Staropoli's jab. I was surprised he didn't use more kicks. Because it's not like Salikov likes going to the ground. So even if he got one of his kicks caught to the body, that would have been fine. But when he was chaining up combination, he had more success against Salikov. But Salikov, for the most part, was catching him off the very first strike, ripping and landing. And I think that stunned and kept... I think that prompted Staropoli's awareness and alertness to go back on an all-time high and be very, very tentative about what he was going to throw. And I think if he used more feints to get in, to draw out an attack, and then maybe you feint the cross and a comeback 1-2, or throw the jab, pull, because you know he's going to come back with something, throw a half-speed jab to get him to commit. Once he commits, then 1-2 or 3-2. Now, this is where you're going. You're fighting with a broken rhythm, a broken tempo. You're not letting the guy know what you're going to do. You're not giving him the same read, the same looks every time, and the same speed. It's like playing baseball. If you know the guy's throwing the same thing over and over, eventually you're gonna be like, all right, I know what you're about to do. Or you're playing basketball, the guy crossed you over 2-3 times with one move, up cross up, whoop, pull, yam it on you, drove it on you to the basket. Now you know what he's gonna do because that's his only move. So maybe you hit him with a fake this way, like he's gonna go this way because you know he's gonna cut it back the other way. So you false step, and then as he cuts back, cookies, snatches on the ball, and then you bring it back to the other way in the other direction for a score. It's kind of that same philosophy. You gotta change it up. Can't be doing the same thing over and over. You gotta give them different things to think about. Salikov did what he had to do. Sometimes he got clipped with some things, but for the most part, he was on cruise control and dominated the fight pretty much from beginning to end. And I did like Staropoli being game with him trying to throw some spinning shit himself every time Salikov tried to throw something or did throw something. You know, he tried to return and land something, some type of spinning shit of his own. So I respected Staropoli for that. And some stuff did land. A lot of it looked kind of like, maybe shouldn't throw too many of those. But some stuff were having success, trying to come through with a spinning back elbow. It kept Salikov honest so he didn't get too close. So that could have been good for that. But in terms of landing and really doing any significant damage, not so much. Our next guy, we have Cyril Gane versus Mays. Submission heel hook in the third round with 14 seconds left. Wow. I wish I was on the podcast with Matt so I could talk about that. Because that was a thing of beauty. That was some art right there. And he was dominating that fight from beginning to end. I was surprised he didn't get a knockout, especially being at the heavyweight division. I thought with the strikes he was landing, the front kicks, the kicks below, the kicks up top, the hands, he hurt him a couple times. I thought that fight was as good as done. That was probably one of the highest level of heavyweight fighting that I've seen in a very long time. Not including the champ and the number one contender in DC versus Stipe Miocic. So, just the display from both guys, but mainly Gane, he looked phenomenal out there. Really, really looked good. And most times heavyweight guys get clipped like that, they go down, they don't get back up. So, that's a big, big difference. So, kudos to both those guys for putting on a performance that mainly us smaller guys usually put on. Oh, shit, I dropped my phone. All right, it is what it is. Next fight, Benil Darius versus Frank Camacho. First round, 2 minutes and 2 seconds in. Benil Darius looked like the Benil Darius that I thought was going to come through and storm the division with his high-level BJJ. And besides that, not even just praising his BJJ, he came out and he looked great on the feet. He was outstriking Frank Camacho, and he looked like a seasoned veteran and awesome. Just... he looked like a true product. It looked like we were finally seeing the true product finished with Benil Darius training out of Kings MMA with Rafael Cordero. His striking was on point. Looked phenomenal. Accurate. Super fast. Everything clean. And then did exactly what he wanted to do to force the issue. Get in on the legs. Drag him down to the ground. He got back up. Camacho did a good job getting back to his feet. But Benil Darius did a good job of locking his hands and maintaining control. Picking him up. Slamming him back down with a big mat return. And from that mat return, that was pretty much all she wrote. He got on his back, threw the hooks in, and dude, he slapped that choke on. And yeah, I wasn't sure if he was going to let his chin get crushed, but eventually he got the choke, and man, that looked tight. Like I said, that looked like the Benil Darius that I thought was going to come through storming the division because I knew how good his BJJ was. And I actually got to roll with him years ago back at the UFC facility. I forgot which event it was that we went down there for, but we got to roll like a while back. The co-main event, Stevie Ray versus Michael Johnson. Majority decision, 29-28 for Stevie Ray. I did not think he won the fight. I thought it was competitive. I thought he offered some pushback. I thought the first round was Johnson's, and I thought the third round was Ray's. I thought Johnson won rounds one and two. And this is another thing about Johnson's, is he always leaves these fights too close for comfort. And it's fascinating because to think that this is a guy who beat Michael Johnson. I mean, Michael Johnson is Michael Johnson. To think this is the guy that beat Tony Ferguson. He beat Edson Barbosa. He beat Dustin Poirier. And he had a really good fight with Nate Diaz before the loss. But he's beat a lot of top competitors. Winning the fight with Josh Emmett, then gets knocked out with a few seconds left in the third round. Not seconds, I think it was like 1 or 2 minutes left. In a fight that he was running away with, tagging him up and then eventually getting caught. I thought the same thing was going to happen. Because he, for some reason, it looks like he either slows down or he just takes his foot off the gas, which is super frustrating to watch. Because I like Johnson a lot. I think he's a really chill dude, cool dude, funny, comedian, kind of cut from the same cloth as myself. And yeah, it just kind of sucks to see. And I know Stevie Ray too. I've met him personally. I just thought Johnson had all the tools to win that fight. And sure enough, I think he let that one slip from out of his grasp. But it is what it is. Sometimes the game goes like that. And Stevie Ray looked tough. Man, when Stevie Ray got him down, man, that ground and pound. I thought that fight was as good as over. And I thought he was going to go for a submission and Johnson was going to try to survive and kill the clock. But he went for the vicious ground and pound, which was clear and dominating to me. And possibly could have even got himself a 10-8 with that. But Johnson did enough earlier in that round that I thought maybe they couldn't give him the 10-8 because he landed such great damage. But that fight looked like it was going to get stopped not once, but at least three different times. So I thought that could have been enough to warrant the 10-8. Despite everything that happened before that in that round. So I don't know. I don't know if you can do that, erase everything, or if you plug it in, you put the pennies in the bank early in the round, maybe the judges, because I don't know exactly what the new criteria is supposed to be. I don't know if you have to consider that and take that with you when judging, or can you just override all that and just look at what actually happened, not even just towards the end, but at one point in the round, if it looked like the fight was going to be stopped three times in one round, does that override everything, if you guys are following me? You know, so I don't know. Now, we got the main event. Damian Maia, third round rear naked choke, 3 minutes and 54 seconds into the very, not the very first round. The very third round. I never really say that. I never say that at all, actually. But it was a crazy fight. But, man, Askren did some good things, some really good things. But for the most part, I even tweeted about this. I said he looked like a fish out on land. Askren could not strike for shit. He was eating some serious shots from Damian Maia. Same thing, very reminiscent of what it looked like against Damian Maia and Kobe Covington in that very first round. Busted Kobe Covington up. Something serious. And I've been saying this about Kobe. I've been saying this about Askren. I think those guys are on the smaller side of 170. When you run into a guy like Damian Maia, you run into a guy like Kamaru Usman, even Ponzinibbio, who's a lot bigger. Who are some of the other bigger guys? Leon Edwards, who's also a big welterweight. You see these big guys, and I'm like, I just don't know how these guys are going to do with these guys. And speaking of that, Leon Edwards has a win over Kobe Covington. And then Kobe Covington has a win over Damian Maia. And maybe Damian Maia beats Leon Edwards. It's such a... That division is the most fun it's ever been in a very, very long time. Where I'm talking the top 10 can... It kind of reminds me of 155. Well, this guy could be that guy, and that guy could be this guy, and this guy could be this guy. It just depends on the day. It just depends on the night. Depends on who shows up. These guys are world beaters. These guys beat the who's of the division. It kind of reminds me of that of 170 right now. It's super crazy, super competitive. Now, going back to what I was saying, now people were saying, I heard Woodley talking about it, like the shovel uppercut that was landing. I'm like, he was eating a lot of knees in the clinch. He was eating a lot of punches. Are we going to really count those few strikes that landed? I'm like, yeah, of course it landed. Don't get me wrong. Let me not sound completely ignorant in that case. I'm not dismissing it. But what I'm saying is the difference in the striking count, the striking ability between Damian Maia and Ben Askren was very far from each other. Maia looked light years ahead of him. And Maia is not the best, most decorated striker in terms of being known for that. But he does have some pop. He can hit. He can crack. But he's not going out there primarily to display kicks and to display punches. He's not looking to do that. He's looking for one thing and one thing only. Take your ass down. Get on your back and strangle a motherfucker. Unconscious. OG backpack. OG backpack. But he was piecing him up pretty serious from the southpaw position. I'm watching it right now. You see Maia coming in, lunging in with the jab and hitting with the crosses. And then Askren trying to grab a hold of him every single time. And in that effort, trying to lock his hands for the body lock takedown, he was eating a ton of knees to the body. Askren was throwing like these little baby knees to the leg, to the thigh. And Maia was letting it count. He was throwing the ones with serious conviction. He rocked Askren at a point, and then at one point, Askren even rocked him with like five jabs that he threw in a row. I think he threw like a 1-2 and then a bunch of little jabs that eventually was like finding the chin with his right hand all the way down by his waist, and he was just trying to attack, and I was like, dude, this looks so ugly, but it worked. You know, everything has some type of application depending on what the situation is. So you can never say one move is completely trash. It depends on the situation. And, of course, the brains of the person doing it. You know, I would never say don't fight with your hands down. Sometimes it's applicable to want to fight with your hands down. Sometimes it's not applicable. Sometimes it's like, yo, if you're going to fight with your hands down right here in this situation, you're going to get your chin clipped and be down on the ground. But here we go. Ashkin with the body lock. He gets the right leg behind his right leg, right knee behind Damian Maia's left leg. And he crunches him down to the ground. And right here, he ends up in a tripod TP situation where he could have probably pummeled his legs in to get to like a half guard or just to destroy one of the butterfly hooks of Damian Maia. Every time Damian Maia got taken down, he always, almost always ended up in a butterfly situation where he was able to float him back up to the top, get back, create space, or to get to a single leg, or just get back to his feet. That was round one. Round two, Ashkin opens up with the body kick. Boom, he eats a big left, but then he opens, comes back, and returns with a shovel uppercut, and that's the one that probably cut Maia on the eyebrow. You know, he'll tie, over tie, and just shovel in a hook and punches in the inside. Now, here's Ashkin coming with the two right hands, three right hands, and then the jab. Oh, so it was four right hands, and it comes back with the jabs, like two jabs coming back the other way. So he did good. It was some good combination. Then Ashkin gets in on a beautiful double twist, takes Maia down, but Maia immediately pulls into butterfly position once again. And this is how he gets back to his feet. Over and over, Ashkin looked like he was in a grip position, and then he ends up in a triangle, goes to the omoplata, threatens with that, and then Ashkin flips to defend. He does the right thing, but Maia controls the hips almost like he's wearing a gi. If he was wearing a gi, he would control the belt line, clutch on that, and keep that motherfucker from rolling. So you can apply that omoplata or sweep him into a full mount situation with a half locked up triangle on the mount position from the omoplata. The three sisters, and I got to show you guys my breakdown on that too. The three sisters, triangle, armbar, omoplata. I'll show you guys that when I finish editing it. And of course, it's going to be money. Cash money. So Ashkin rolls over. Now Ashkin looked like he was going to go for a triangle choke on Maia, but nope, he ends up in the full guard on his back. That's pretty much how the second round ends. Now the third round, Ashkin lands a big body lock takedown, slams him down to the ground, inside control, tight, his hands locked. Maya's got his left arm trapped, pinned, and you can see him pushing on the hip of Ashkin because Ashkin left a little bit of space, enough for him to reclaim that guard situation. Now, I'm waiting for the transition. He sweeps in what we call Ashigarami, comes out through the legs, reaps the leg. Ashkin gets swept, tries to defend the leg lock, eventually gives up his back. He thought he was going to get out, and then he ends up in a figure four. And right here, he puts the chin crush on. Now, this is what people don't understand, the beauty of Maia right here. He's attacking with the left hand. I know Tyron Woodley was talking about this a lot. He goes for his chokes with the left hand side. Not the right hand side that most of us do because we're righties. He takes a lefty, he goes with the right, he comes back, he swims through with the left. He gets a hold of just his form. He tried to go palm to palm, he couldn't get it. Ashkin starts fighting in hand, goes 2-1. So he's 2-1 in his hand. So his hand's not behind the head in a traditional sense where you hit the Mataleon and you push the head forward and you retract your elbows, open the chest, and apply the pressure to the carotid arteries. Now from here, Maia takes his left hand, he's grabbing his forearm right now. So the left hand is behind the neck. His other hand is behind trying to reinforce it, but Ben Ashton's going 2-1, so the pressure is getting relieved. He's relieving the pressure, but at the same time, he's holding on and using his forearm to drive his hand and keep that reinforcement into the carotid artery. Ashton taps once, and he goes out almost instantly. Kind of reminds me of what happened possibly with him and Robbie Lawler. Except Robbie, supposedly when Ashton let go of the choke, then Robbie woke up, kind of like that, because Ashton woke up almost like 2-3 seconds later. He wasn't even out very long whatsoever. But you know what, guys? We're gonna wrap this up because I want to do its own official segment for UFC 244. I might have what we call my own fight companion kind of thing. I'm ripping off of Joe Rogan right now with my roommate Stephen Lee, and one of my boys from around the way might come through too. Now, they don't really know much about fighting. Stephen Lee does because he's trained. He's actually fought. He actually wrestled in high school, and he watches the sport religiously. Now, my other friends, this is what's going to make it fun and entertaining because these guys don't really know much of jack shit. They pretty much only watch me fight and they never trained, so they don't really know much. So it's going to be funny, so bear with us. And some of the crazy shit that might be said, I don't know what's going to be said, what's not going to be said. Maybe they know a little bit more than I'm leading to be, and they studied it a little bit. I don't know. But it's going to be a fun segment. I got three mics. I got to get these things set up, and we're going to have ourselves a good time. Probably drink a couple brewskis and break down the fights. Break down the fights. Right now, other than that, quick shout out to my sponsors, Manscaped. Thank you guys. If you guys want, the Lawnmower 2.0 is out right now. They are looking to revamp the product, guys. My code is Funkmaster at checkout. Get yourself 20% off. And my CBD company, Hydrocanna, 25 milligrams of CBD right inside of the product. We got the little shooters. We got the canna sticks. Now, the canna sticks, you can infuse that with water, and you can get more of the water to replenish yourself after a long night of drinking, or you can just take a quick shot to help get you all the electrolytes you need. Scientifically proven ratios for perfect rehydration. It's kind of the equivalent, not kind of, it is the equivalent of a IV bag and Pedialyte. It's better than Pedialyte. It's better than Gatorade. And again, this is scientifically proven. Those things, except the IV bag, the other stuff, Pedialyte, other stuff, it's not a scientific ratio that those guys are using. So I'm telling you, go to the website, drinkhydrocanna.com, go check those guys out, use the discount code Funkmaster, and if you order more than $50 worth of product, you will get a free Funkmaster chain shirt. Go check that shit out. And on that note, guys, thanks for listening, thanks for subscribing, and for all the listeners around the world, especially all the love I got in Australia, all my Scottish friends, my fans from all over the world, Holland, the guys who be hitting me up and sending me messages. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for tuning in. And again, tell a friend to tell a friend. And like my shit, subscribe to my shit, or spinning back fist. I can't really do a spinning back fist right now because my hand is set up. But on that note, I'll holler at you guys later. I'll holler at you later.